Make sure that we have peace and quiet here. If I could ask Ms. County Board Member Ann Gorman, if you could please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Mayor, I need you to swear in. If you haven't already signed in, would you please do so for the roll call?
We have a quorum. I would like everyone to rise again and observe a moment of silence for Captain Jake Ringering of the Godfrey Fire Department, who died from injuries sustained while fighting a fire in Bethalto. Thank you. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the February 20th meeting.
So moved.
You don't have to do that. You just need to ask if they want them corrected, sir.
That's right. Any motion to make any changes? If none, they're approved. Thank you. We do have three speakers signed up this evening. Is Mr. Stephen Hansen here? Mr. Hansen, if you could please come forward, take your time. And as you're on the way down, if I could just remind everyone that you have 3 minutes to speak. And that 3 minutes begins when you begin to speak. And at the 2.5 minute mark, I will tap the gavel and you'll know that you have 30 seconds left. Any speech you have, you can certainly give to the county clerk to place that on deposit.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Steve Hansen. I'm a member of the Madison County Historical Society. And there are three of us who are going to speak this afternoon. I want to talk to you a little bit about who we are and our relationship to the county. I'll be followed by one of my colleagues who's going to talk about where we're going as a historical society. And then my third colleague will talk about why you should care. The Historical Society is a private nonprofit. We're a 501c3. We have about 180 paid members of the Historical Society. And we own three buildings that you, the county government, leases from us. We own the museum, the library, and a storage building. And we lease this along with all of our collections and all of our artifacts to the county government for $1 a year. And in turn, the county government provides funding for operations and for staff for the operation of the museum and the library. Because we own the buildings and the collections and the artifacts, we have a different relationship with the county government than maybe some of your other advisory boards might have, whether it's for mental health or for children's advocacy. Because we're a private nonprofit, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the organization, which is legal and ethical, and so that we have more of a partnership with the county government. And in fact, our lease agreement says that we are to work collaboratively in providing services to the citizens of Madison County. I want to tell you that we're very proud of the library and the museum and the collections we have. We're proud of the programs we provide. And we're exceedingly proud of the staff that the county government provides for the library and for the museum. They've been doing an outstanding job. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mr. Klaus in the audience? Mr. Klaus, also please take your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking here today as a new board member of the Madison County Historical Society. I'm a graduate of the University of Illinois, retired executive director of the University of Alabama Museums. I chose this area for retirement 6 years ago because of access to a broad range of cultural assets and a strong sense of local history, which residents see as a meaningful part of their identity. I see access to local history as an essential service and a crucial component of the self-identity and quality of life that sets this community apart from corporate uniformity taking over the nation. Madison County History Museum Archives, Library, and Collections of the Madison County Historical Society are a storehouse of local history. The Madison County Historical Society, which owns the museum buildings and its collections, as Steve had just mentioned, in cooperation with the county museum staff, are engaged in a three-part program that will bring operations up to current standards, create a modern museum facility, and present Madison County's heritage to a contemporary audience. To accomplish these goals, the MCHS has just completed an updated strategic plan, some of which I elaborate upon here. First is ensuring the museum operations and procedures employ best museum practices as codified by the American Alliance of Museums. The museum, archival, library, collections consists of tens of thousands of objects donated by thousands of Madison County residents over the last 100 years. MCHS board and museum staff are ethically bound to provide appropriate care and documentation for those items for the long term. These objects include local residents' accoutrements from service in the military, objects and documentation of contributions to local labor and industry, service as elected officials, as well as about unique individuals and events. Second is the restoration and renovation of the Weir House. This 183-year-old building listed on the National Register of Historic Places will serve as the home of a new museum of Madison County history, a place to begin an historical journey in what was and is a crossroads of America. The museum has a new roof installed in 2017, a new state-of-the-art HVAC system, exterior paint removal and brickwork stabilization scheduled to complete this summer, returning the building to its original appearance. Following that will be the installation of the remainder of the new windows and bringing the electrical system up to code. To date, the MCHS has expended over $650,000 in private funds, bringing the historic structure up to museum standards. The third part of the program is the creation of a museum experience that will appeal to a contemporary audience. Within the overarching theme of Madison County, Crossroads of America, our vision is to relay critical components of Madison County history as a reflection of United States history. MCHS board and museum staff have worked for 3 years to develop the integrative themes that are going to be in the museum. Thank you.
Mr. Mudge, you're the next speaker. Please take your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bensler. In watching 3 minutes, it goes by real quick. In the courtroom, we usually have 15, so I'll speed this up. I'm not nervous because I'm before this esteemed body. I'm nervous because my younger sister is going to be critiquing this next time I see her. So, what is the significance of Madison County history? Madison County, the community, has supported the museum for 60 years. We're unique in many respects because few counties support a local museum. But that is because the Madison County history has a significant history. The history began as early as 1050 to 1200 AD when a city larger than the city of London stood at our southern border in Cahokia, Illinois, where the Mississippian culture thrived for several hundred years and maintained a city between 20 and 30,000 people. Since then, in our memory, we have many other important historical events that occurred here, part of because this was a crossroads to the development of the state as a state. Five Illinois governors were raised and grew up in Madison County. Later, in 1804, it was the point of departure for the Lewis and Clark expedition, where they camped on the shores of the Mississippi River near today's Wood River. Prior to that, the land office in Madison County, if you wanted to purchase ground in the Northwest Territory, you came to Edwardsville in Madison County to do that. Madison County at that time ran from our southern border with St. Clair County all the way up to the Canadian border. It became a focal point of the election, ultimately, of our first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, when he visited Madison County on at least three occasions, one of which he gave a speech during the great Lincoln and Douglas debate, which ultimately led to his election as president in 1860, the first Republican president in history. There was before that a duel between him and a James Shield that started in Madison County and led to an island on the Mississippi River. Furthermore, there are many other historical events, and the museum recognizes the military history and valor of our veterans, people who established this area as an industrial hub. Because my time is limited, I will quote three quotes about the importance of history. One was by Teddy Roosevelt, who said, "The more you know your the past, the better you can respond to the future."
Thank you, Mr. Mudge.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. Mr. Walters, on behalf of the Executive Committee, if you could bring in the two resolutions.
Okay. We have a resolution to pay the Veterans Assistance Commission bill and a resolution to authorize access to USL financial system.
Do we have a desire to separate these two resolutions?
Separate.
Okay. Well, let's go with the resolution to pay the Veterans Assistance Commission bill.
So moved.
Yes. Any discussion?
Or second.
Second. Mr. Parkinson.
I want to address the opinion of the 5th District Appellate Court. Page 27 and 28 of the opinion, the payment of $16,500 is completely within the discretion of this board. The plaintiff has failed to prove why they are entitled to this payment. They did not submit it during budget year. $16,400 was ordered to be paid because it was submitted during the budget year. We have 17 and 18 that are still open. I think we're setting precedent in approving this to allow them to get paid for that as well. And there was an email sent from the Burkhart Law Office on December 15, 2016, in which Section 2 talked about $6,092.50 was payment for what is a personal lawsuit, which to me is a violation of law. So I can't vote for this. As much as I would like to put this to bed, and I do support the veterans getting all their money, I'm not going to be able to vote for this because it is my belief that this is going to contain an illegal expenditure. And I'd like to hear from Mr. Gibbons on that.
Mr. Gibbons, do you believe this is an illegal? If we vote for this, this is illegal?
The email in question does identify that at that time, a portion of $16,500 was attributable to what is known as a 1983 action in federal court. That is a personal civil rights suit that at the time had a single individual as the plaintiff. So it was, in fact, a claim of attorney's fees to be paid out of public funds for the sole benefit of an individual and not for the VAC. So that I think that is an accurate interpretation, the use of public funds for a private purpose, and certainly was an issue of, I think, substantial concern as to the legality of that and the potential criminality of that.
So it's your opinion that, and that's the answer to Mr. Parkinson's question, that it would be illegal to pay this bill?
I think certainly at least that portion is... It would be a grave concern, and I would recommend against payment.
And we're talking about warrant. To be clear, we're talking about warrant 16-5. Is that how we refer to this?
Yeah, it's the 5th District Appellate Court's ruling in 16-5.
Okay.
And it's just for the portion of the bill that relates to what, by an email sent by Burkhart, outlines, while I do understand that we can't ask for a detailed bill, this was something that was submitted to us, which then gives us knowledge that this is for a personal lawsuit, not for an expenditure of the VA, which in my belief, that's taxpayers' dollars being spent for private, and I think that we need to look into that more before we vote to approve this expenditure.
Just one more clarification. So, Mr. Gibbons, you're saying that this would be illegal for the county board to pay warrant 16-5?
I would say that payment of a portion, any payment of public funds for a solely personal purpose, a personal lawsuit, would be an illegal expenditure.
So your answer is yes. Warrant 16-5. This warrant that we're discussing, warrant 16-5.
This board has the ability to determine what it pays and what it doesn't pay. I don't think it has to be a yes or no question. I think that this board has the ability to piece apart these things and make a decision as to the best course of action. I'm not making that claim as to the whole of 16-5. I'm simply making that statement as to that specific portion that the individual identified as what I believe to be an illegal expenditure of public funds.
Mr. Wesley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have any verifiable information as to how much of this warrant is earmarked for personal versus municipal business or for county business?
My understanding of that warrant is that all detail was redacted from it, and it was simply a listing of an amount. That later email was very limited, and without detailed billing records, there's no way to determine the specificity of what amounts of 16-5 actually apply to that.
Mr. Wesley?
From what I understand, the detail of these bills, and I could be wrong, so correct me if I am, the detail of these bills was discussed in their board meeting. Is that accurate information?
I don't know the answer to that. I wasn't present.
And if they were discussed in their board, then we ought to be able to get at least some information from their board as to how much of this is earmarked for proper payment.
I would think that those records would be available to the VAC that they would have had unredacted, but I can't say that with certainty. It's certainly something available to be. It's something that this board could pursue.
Thank you.
Mr. Madison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gibbons, I read the court case, and 16-4 that we've already paid and 16-5 were listed on the same document, and I'm curious because 16-4 was in the local case, correct? And 16-5, are you saying, is that the federal case?
The email that was sent to the auditor's office gives a very basic breakdown of different legal matters that Mr. Burkhart was claiming fees for. So I can't say as to what the specifics of 16-4, but as to 16-5, that email referenced only 16-5 and different legal matters that were addressed in it.
And is 16-5 the federal case?
16-5 includes a mixture of different cases.
A mixture.
Yeah.
So it does have some that we should be paying or we're going to end up back in court again.
No, because based on the ruling of the appellate court, because that warrant was submitted outside of the budget year for which it claimed the expenses, that there's no basis upon which that can be recovered under legal action.
It did. It gave us the discretion.
It's totally within this board's discretion.
Yes.
There is no legally compelling means, and the court specifically pointed out they cannot compel
but
you.
But we already did that in 16-4, correct? Because we were the reason that it got pushed off so far until they ran out of their budget, and then it had to be paid from funds for a previous year. So I think that's the same applies here. Does it not?
16-4 is a different matter. The appellate court put that in a separate category because it was submitted during the budget year at a time when there were adequate funds. So I think the court sort of set that one on an island as a separate situation.
Thank you. Mr. Walters?
Yeah.
Did you want to say anything more? Were you wanting to speak?
No, I didn't have my hand.
Mr. Chapman?
If I understand correctly, it is our discretion to pay for that portion of 16-5 that is legal, but there is a portion of that bill that we're being told by the state's attorney is illegal, but we don't know how much that is. Is that correct?
I think that the basis for what amount I'm saying I think is it. I'm saying I don't know exactly how much of it yes. would be attributable. I know what Mr. Burkhart said in his email yes. as to what it was, but absent actual records and to verify what was and wasn't included for which case, I don't have a way to say that accurately how much is, but what I can say is he did admit that he was billing for a personal lawsuit.
Thank you. Mr. Fassin and then Mr. Slessor.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. The portion that's on the federal case in the bill or the invoice that we're speaking of is around $6,000. That's what the federal case. So that's what the amount is ballpark.
Well, that's what he says.
Yeah.
We just don't have any records to verify yet at this point.
Mr. Slessor, would you like to come forward or just...
My voice isn't as loud as Rick's. A couple things. So the opinion did say that we are not allowed, they do not have to provide us with itemized invoices because we were forced to pay 16-4 it was our discretion. Basically, what the opinion has stated is that they only have to submit a warrant with a vendor name and an amount going forward. The language in 1991, then the legislation took the county board and the county board chairman and any of their designees out of the legislation, and it's only required to be approved by the superintendent of the VAC. Now, that doesn't make any sense to a lot of us because we're used to that kind of oversight, but that's what the law says, unfortunately, in our case. And so if we want to have more oversight, then the law has to get changed because the court made their decision based on what the law says because of that change from 89 to 91. Now, so with that being said, there's a couple things. I mean, you could say that we're going to appropriate the money, and if they pay something that they shouldn't have paid, then that board has to be held accountable in some way because we're not technically supposed to be even reviewing their invoices at this point. As distasteful as that might be to us, that's just what the law says. I mean, we can argue it till we're blue in the face, which we did for 2 years, and we lost. If you wanted to just amend that and say, we're going to pay everything but $6,000 of that because that's what we feel like he might have been referring to in this email, then I would recommend you do that. I would say I have been working with Mr. Leviti regularly talking about some of these issues, and we're making some progress. Obviously, we can't talk about pending litigation in open session, but we've been having a lot of these discussions without having, no offense to the attorneys, but without billing attorneys, which is saving us a lot of money. And I think this would be a good faith effort if we did just approve this and it would go a long ways towards some of the efforts we're working on for future matters.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Mr. Someone who hasn't spoken yet?
Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Wesley?
Yes, I just got one question. If we as a board make a decision to pay this in full, does that exonerate us of any responsibility if some of it's later found to be paid for personal fees based on the fact that we don't know what that difference is? I mean, does that go back to the other board?
I think that it does potentially expose this board to a taxpayer lawsuit.
Thank you.
The board does have knowledge of this, unfortunately. I want to make a comment as to what Mr. Slessor said. I think it, by and large, what he said is accurate, but I do want to add that the appellate court did provide the means by which this board could have accountability of those expenditures. The appellate court instructed us that if the board passes a set of specific rules that apply to detailed expenditure reports, this board can have that oversight. It does have the option, but at this point we don't have that. So it was just leaving that out there as a path that if the board chooses to secure some oversight and transparency and that stuff, the board does have the authority to do it. It just hasn't been exercised. So at this point in time, that does not exist. It would be a matter for the board to make a decision about.
Thank you. Mr. Slessor, back to you.
There was one thing else that I wanted to say because it's been said that this was an invoice that was submitted outside of that fiscal year, but it was actually partially booked as a payable for that fiscal year. The reason that the way I interpret is what the court said is that since there was no longer any more money in their budget to pay it out of that year, that's why it was not, the circuit court order was not valid. So, and then it said, but there was nothing that would prevent them from then coming to the board and asking for a special appropriation, which would be at the discretion of the board. So that's why this one here, I'm not talking about anything in the future, but I just think this specific one, I think it would be an act of good faith, and I don't think we would be out of bounds in appropriating money for it. So that's just my opinion. And I don't think this is a partisan matter. I just think it's a – because Rick and I have discussed this at length, and we're not 100% in agreement on every single issue on this, but we are working to a resolution just to make sure that we can have a tenable relationship going forward and we can put a lot of this stuff behind us. So,
Mr. McCray?
Yeah, I'm just going to say what I gleaned from reading the opinion was was that what they were saying was basically the VAC has a board of directors, and that board of directors is really that's their trustees, and if they say the bill is valid, then the court says that as long as it was within their budget and they had the money to pay it, our function is to pay it and not really scrutinize it. That's what I gleaned from it, it seems counterintuitive to most of us because we're used to, you know, looking at all these bills all the time from different things and having, but we have a different relationship, and it's really the onus is on the VAC board, and so our challenge is to have to vote to authorize payment outside their regular budget, I suppose. But anyway, that's what I gleaned from it, was the onus is really on the VAC board, and they could really the hammer we do have is we do set their levy, and so if we think that there are inappropriate things going on, we could say, you know, we do have that ability is to vote on their levy.
Thank you. Correct? Mr. Holliday.
Mr. Chairman, according to law, the superintendent has the authority to say if he wants that paid or not. So if he comes up with that, says that that's what he wants done, then I think we should go ahead on and get it paid and taken care of, and then we move on.
Any other comments here, Mr. Madison?
I agree with the previous board members, Mr. Mm-hmm. Givens, on this subject. I think they've stated it very eloquently and correctly, as after all the findings that I've read by the courts, they've said over and over again that this case is a little different, but that we have to stop saying we don't have to pay the bills, and that even if we believe that they're wrong, we still don't have that oversight because they have the oversight. And even if they do something wrong, they'll have to answer to their superiors.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Walters, if you would please bring in the resolution, the second resolution.
The resolution to authorize access to USL financial system.
Okay. Any discussion?
Is there a motion on the floor?
Yes. Yes. Any motion?
Second.
Mr. Parkinson?
Was there a motion yet? I'm sorry. I'd like to hear from Mr. Fasten.
It hasn't been second.
Who made the motion?
I don't think you need a second anymore.
Walters brought in.
Yeah, we don't need a second.
Thank you.
No, we don't need a second. Yeah, go ahead. Mr. Parkinson?
I would like to hear from Mr. Fasten as this directly affects him.
Okay. Mr. Fasten?
I want to restate my position. As I've said, you can pass a resolution if you want. I don't have to abide by it, and I don't mean to be oppositional to this body because I want to cooperate, but I will reiterate again, Scott, I think this is the first time I've told you this, I will revisit this situation at the end of the investigation. I'm not going to turn over personal information to people that are under investigation, and that's it. So my answer is this, when this concludes and we see what the findings of this investigation are, then I will revisit this.
Any additional comments? Mr. Wesley.
Yes, I'd like to address this to Mr. Gibbons. Is there anything in the statute that allows Mr. Fasten to set aside this information on his own?
So you're asking whether or not the county board has the ability, are you asking whether he can control the
public
computer systems within his office?
No, I'm asking if he has the control to withhold public information on his own.
public? Well, I think he's talking about private information.
He's talking about the general ledger, which is public.
Not in its entirety. I've viewed portions of the general ledger that are absolutely excluded from public release.
And those should be scrubbed, and the rest should be allowed for public vision.
I think, depending on what you mean by that.
Anything that's FOIA-able should be allowed for the administration to see. Whether they're, can you state, I'm sorry, Mr. Wesley, you have the floor.
No, I was just asking if there's a statute that allows him to unilaterally withhold information from the public.
I think he has the ability to, he has the obligation to operate the system. He has the obligation to maintain control of it. If we're talking about FOIA, as Mr. Madison brings up, FOIA has limitations. So I believe my understanding is there are hundreds of thousands or millions of records in this thing, which would go way beyond what FOIA would allow for. So I think we're kind of talking apples and oranges on that one. As to whether or not you're talking about, now you say the word scrubbed. We had an extensive conversation about this in the past, about whether that is a practical solution to, say, scrubbing data. But let's say you placed all this data online for all the world to see. We would be in massive violation of the privacy rights and federal and state statutes by doing that, and would be subject to probably a massive class action lawsuit. So to say we're going to go through hundreds of thousands or millions of records and just there's no button to press to scrub, because the way these records are, these records go back decades. And if I recall correctly from our prior detailed discussions about this stuff, we're talking about records that are not all entered in the same fashion. So there's not just a column you can black out or any of that, because these records go in and they went in and under multiple sets of protocols. And so to accomplish the, I think what you're using the term scrubbing of these things is an extraordinary task. I'm not saying it can't be done, but I'm saying it is an extraordinary task because it will require going through, I think, by and large, hundreds of thousands of records to identify whether or not they contain that private information that we're obligated by law to protect and to keep from public view. As to the process for that, that I think is solely within the office holder's determination.
Thank you. Ms. Glasper?
Mr. Chairman, can Mr. Fasten, as auditor, withhold disclosing this information, personal or otherwise? As auditor, can he do this?
I think that's similar to the question that Mr. Wesley was asking. You're asking our state's attorney that question.
May I ask?
Yes.
Can he, as auditor, withhold this information?
I think that he should release it according to statute. And the public right to access for information is through the Freedom of Information Act.
But personal information.
Never personal information. And that's the issue with this stuff. I mean, we went through this. We had meetings on this stuff and spent hours and hours looking at it. Certain members of the committee were brought in for viewing in an attorney-client privilege situation to look at these things, and so that Mr. Fasten could show everybody what's involved in this stuff. And so this is not a matter of placing something out into the public domain and saying we can just do that. I know that my legal concern is that the county's going to have a class action lawsuit if this gets released in a way where personal records, including medical, there's a huge amount of medical records in there, all kinds of stuff that we cannot allow to be released without creating huge liability. So, again, I think that he has an obligation to release information according to statute, but only according to the statutes as they relate to those records, the Public Record Act and the Freedom of Information Act. And there are limitations on that. And I think that a lot of the information in that database falls under those limitations.
Mr. Madison?
Thank you, Chairman. I have two questions, one for Mr. Fasten and one for Mr. Gibbs. Mr. Fasten, if there was no investigation here, would you go ahead and release that information?
Given within the limitations of what Mr. Gibbons is stating, I told you I would revisit this at the conclusion of this investigation.
Very good. That's all I wanted to know.
Okay. Well, I'm going to expand on it a little bit.
I don't need you to. That's the answer I was looking for.
Somebody else does.
But this is the answer I'm asking for.
Well, okay.
Mr. Gibbons.
Thank you, Mr. Passon.
Mr. Gibbons.
You have a checkbook online. You've got all
Mr. Passon, you're out of order.
You've already said all this.
Yeah,
Mr.
No,
Gibbons, I would like to ask, is there a state statute, a law of any kind that you know of that says if somebody's under investigation, they cannot see financial information even though they're the executive of the county?
Is there a state statute that prohibits
them
from seeing private information or public information?
Yes and yes.
Those are different things.
Then I need to know both.
There are state statutes that prohibit the release of private information to all other individuals.
Okay, I understand that. Mm-hmm. So, then the other information.
Okay, public information is within limitations of statute. It's publicly available, but there's no law requiring that be placed online or made available.
No, there isn't. Okay. But I mean publicly, but to the county executive. I mean,
there's no statute that gives him any authority beyond the board.
But he is the board, and we have one elected official that's overruling many elected officials, and we're showing a pattern here where they're going to force us to ask for a court order, and so we're going to yet again be wasting taxpayers' money. Going for another court order that's going to get drug out, and maybe we won't pay the bill, and then we're going to fight whatever comes down. It's going to go on and on and on. Maybe it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars again, when I would say the majority of the voting members have the say.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Chapman.
Two questions. Point of personal information. Does this resolution to authorize access to the USL financial system, is it within the limitations of statute, and does it violate the HIPAA laws that we all want to honor?
I think that this resolution, the way it is written, could be interpreted in a way that would create a massive violation of privacy rights for the citizens whose records are contained in it.
So this could be amended or rewritten or postponed and then wordsmithed to allow the chief executive and perhaps others access to this information within statute and HIPAA. Is that correct?
Actually, let me correct my prior answer. I don't believe that the county board has the authority to order this. But this is a unique question, and I think Mr. Madison asks some really good questions here. And, you know, we don't want to go to court. We don't want to have a court battle. I think this board certainly isn't looking to get into that, but there's interest on both sides. I will entertain, if the board is so interested, to try to draft a request to the Attorney General's office to see if they – I'm not aware of any prior opinions to see whether the Attorney General's office is willing to weigh in. If that's the will of the board, I'm happy to do that.
Mr. Walters, did you have anything additional to say?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, Mr. Chairman, can you tell me the other counties in the state of Illinois where the auditor will not give this information to the chairman?
No, I'm not aware of others. In fact, I'm aware of every comparable county in the state of Illinois where at least the county administrator has read-only access, and usually department heads, for example, the treasurer in Sangamon County, has the ability to go on the financial software and see the general ledger as it pertains to his department. He does not have the ability to alter. It's a read-only access. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Mr. Moore, or Ms. Gorman, if I could. We have a lot of folks who are lined up to talk.
I just had a couple questions. I hear everybody going back and forth, but is there an immediate need for this information, or can we provide this information, as Rick stated, once the investigation is complete?
We've been waiting 2 years, 3.5 months. Mr. Moore?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I had a question for Mr. Gibbons, if I could. So obviously there's people within the county that do see this information in the auditor's office, for example. So they have responsibilities in their job that they need to look at privacy information. I don't know if they sign anything or not, but why couldn't we have a document signed or prepared then for the administration to say that they, because the administration has oversight over all the county functions. It seems to me that we could have a letter drafted to give to whoever that the chairman and the county minister I'd like to have access is, have them sign a waiver saying that non-disclosure agreement or whatever you might call it. But if some people have access as part of their job, why can't the county board oversight have that same type of oversight?
Thank you.
Can we get a waiver from all the individuals who have their private information going through the existing process?
Well, I'm not saying that, but if there are people, right, that do see this information.
To swear an oath to abide by to perform the duties of the auditor's office.
Exactly. To swear an oath that they're not going to disclose any personal and private information that they see in the performance of their jobs, which, again, I go back to, I believe that the county administration, their job is the oversight of all county functions. So it's just the common sense that they, too, would have the access to the same information. They just sign the document saying they're not going to disclose it.
The chairman of the county board's powers does not include oversight of the auditor's office, though.
Well, I'll add something else. You're pushing back on that. I appreciate your point of view. But I also believe that the county auditor does not have responsibility or authority to say who does and who doesn't get access to the county general ledger.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Ms. Novosich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in this document that we all received tonight about the financial information systems across other Illinois counties, and here it does state administration access to the FIS for Kane and Sagamon, it says no. Most of these are read-only. They have a few that are exceptions, but I'm just kind of curious of why, if we need probably a separation of power on this, and I'm not sure that us voting.
If I could jump in, and I don't know why that says, that's in a table that was prepared, and I believe it's an error, because if you go to the detail, in fact, I do have direct knowledge of Sangamon County, that the department, it says right here in the detail, that the departments have, department heads.
Read-only access.
Have read-only access to their individual budgetary information on the FIS.
Right,
the county administration has access to the general ledger through the auditor's office when they want to review their reports. The financial data is public, and anyone can request and receive that information, above all members of the administration. That's from the auditor's office in Sangamon County.
Okay, can I hear from Auditor Fasson, please?
We have other members of the committee who would like to speak. You're out of order, Mr. Fasson, again. How many times this evening? Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out in the resolution that we have in front of us, it actually does say read access, so it would be comparable to those. Mr. Chairman, may I address Mr. Gibbons, please?
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Gibbons, I have a question for you. I'm hoping that you are able to answer it with a straight yes or no. Were other chairmen before this chairman allowed to look at these records?
That's not a legal question. I don't know the factual answer, though. I'm not aware. I don't know the answer.
Okay.
Any additional?
I do have an additional question for you before. So you seem very concerned about limitations on the statute here. Was there a concern before about limitations on the statute if we are
What statute are you referencing?
Precedent? I am referencing 30.04, which is the statute that says that the county budget should be made by the chairman and the auditor.
You're talking about a budget document prepared in an annual year?
I'm talking about our statutes.
The county ordinance?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure how that relates to the general ledger.
What I'm getting at is I don't feel like anyone was concerned before that the chairman of the county board had access to the financials. our chairman is asking for read-only access, and now there is a concern. I want to know what the difference is and why. I think our statute hasn't changed, but we are changing our rules. And it seems unreasonable to ask someone who is in charge of putting a budget together to do so without having access, read-only access, to those numbers. Would you agree with that?
You're not asking me a legal question. You're asking a political question.
I ask your opinion.
Well, what's the legal opinion that you're asking for?
Sir Gibbons, I'm frustrated. I feel like you are not being forthright in answering questions.
Mr. Guy?
Yes, I stated this in executive committee earlier. It's just like deja vu over again. Our county code in 3004, it's chapter 3004, section D, says the county board chairperson will work with the county administrator and county auditor to prepare a draft county budget for presentation to the finance committee. And I think it's a reasonable request. If the county board chairman is supposed to present a budget, he should have access to the check registry. And I'll say, as a former township trustee and village trustee member, I had access to the check registry at both those local governments. And as a township trustee, I put the finances online, and general assistance is not public. So I just took my whiteout pen and whited it out, posted everything online. Haven't been sued. I followed the law. So I think what we're asking is something very reasonable. If we expect the county board chairman to present a budget, he should have access to the finances. No personal information, medical records and such. But I think that's a reasonable request.
Any additional comments from the board members? If not, yes, Mr. Parkinson.
I'm curious, along the lines of what was asked earlier, was the previous administration granted access?
No.
Mr. Fassin?
No, they weren't. Let me say this.
Mr. Fassin, you've answered the question. I'd like to go, but we can't spend all night talking about this. I will say that, Mr. Parkinson, related to your question, we see that all other county administrators and many department heads throughout comparable counties through the Illinois have access. It is true, and you can see the benchmark.
I did have one more comment before we'll finish. You know, the argument that you need it to pass the budget every year is kind of lost on me, because we've passed two budgets already and you didn't have access to it.
Yeah, Mr. Wesley?
Yes. We have a resolution before us, and like many resolutions, when they get acted upon and get enforced, policies and other ways we do business in the county changes. What effect is this resolution going to have moving forward on the auditor's office if it is passed?
Who are you directing that question to?
I could direct it to Mr. Gibbons, or from a legal standpoint, or to you, Mr. Chairman. From a legal standpoint, Mr. Gibbons, could you weigh in on what effect this resolution will have legally?
My legal opinion is that this board does not have the authority to enforce the resolution. A court or the Attorney General may disagree with me, but I don't believe that this board has that authority. There is a separation of authorities between constitutionally elected public offices and county boards and county board members and the administration. I think that this crosses that line. That's my opinion. I think in order to enforce it, the board would probably have to file suit.
Thank you. I think we've discussed this enough. I'm calling roll call. Thank you. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, please note I stood most of that time. My calves are killing me.
Mr. Moore, on behalf of the Finance Committee, if you could please bring in the items.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the board, the Finance Committee presents the following three items for your consideration: the summary report of claims and transfers for the month of February, an immediate emergency appropriation to plus up the FY 2019 Illinois tobacco-free grant budget in the amount of $307, This was the amount that was remainder from last year's $10,000 grant that was not spent before the end of fiscal year 2018. Lastly, a resolution authorizing settlement of a workers' compensation claim, file number 10-029, in the amount of $35,000. This is compensation for the loss of use of approximately 20% of a left leg resulting from an injury of a Madison County employee while in the line of duty. The settlement has been agreed to by the claimant, the Director of Safety and Risk Management, legal counsel for the Workers' Compensation Program, the Workers' Compensation Commission, and the Finance Committee, and would be a full and final payment. After a Finance Committee discussion, votes and unanimous approval of agenda items C1, 2, and 3, I move that the Board adopt the February Claim Transfer Report, the Immediate Emergency Appropriation, and the Workers' Compensation Resolution.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Michael, on behalf of the Grants Committee, if you could please bring in the resolutions.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow board members, the Grants Committee this evening has four items for your consideration. Before I get into them, would anybody prefer that one of them would be separated out? Hearing none, then our first item is a resolution authorizing a park and recreation grants, and the aggregated total here is $1,371,495.94. Second item is a resolution authorizing the proclamation to end veteran homelessness in the County of Madison. Third item is a resolution authorizing the application to Illinois Department of Human Services for the 2020 Emergency and Transitional Housing Grant in Madison County. And the fourth item is also a resolution authorizing the application to the Illinois Department of Human Services, but this time it's for the 2020 Emergency Solutions Grant in Madison County. And I do move all four their adoption, and they all passed unanimously out of committee.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Walters, on behalf of the Judiciary Committee and the Finance and Government Operations Committee, if you could please bring in the two resolutions.
Okay. Would you like for me to bring in E and D together?
Sure.
Or E and F? Okay. We have a resolution to award a contract for janitorial supplies for a six-month period for the Madison County Jail, a resolution to purchase for professional services medical care at the Madison County Detention Home, and under F, we have a resolution to purchase a four-year renewal of regional microwave network maintenance for the Madison County Sheriff's Office.
Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Madison, on behalf of the Planning and Development Committee, if you could bring in the resolutions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, fellow board members. I'm going to bring in items G and H together, unless anyone has any reason that I should not. The Planning and Development Committee has two resolutions for your consideration. Number one, zoning resolutions. I will just let everybody know that item Z190003 was contested by a board member, but it was also being looked into the exact same time by the Office of Planning and Development, and everyone has come to the conclusion that if we add an amendment to Z190003 that states the following, and this is already in writing and has been agreed to by all the parties, that the applicant shall record the following restrictions to the property deed. The property owner shall provide an engineered evaluation of the flood elevation resulting from localized flooding and shall adhere to a minimum sill elevation that raises the elevation of any structural openings above the flood elevation as determined by the evaluation at the time of the building permit application. The property owner shall hold harmless Jarvis Township and Madison County government for any flooding issue resulting from building a structure in a proposed location. So,
Mr. Madison, is it appropriate for there to be a motion in this body, since there that was not passed in the committee, if there would be a motion in this body to amend the resolution?
Well, I'll defer to the state's attorney. Mr. Gibbons, do we need to bring that in separately? And as we make a motion in a second, do we need to amend it at that point, or can we amend it at this point?
I think for practical purposes, it might be easier to separate it out just to do it separately. But if it was voted on in committee, regardless of the outcome of the vote of the committee, it shall come before the board. Even resolutions that are voted in the negative at a committee, they still have to advance to the board for the board to exercise their judgment. So, but for ease of perhaps the clerk's purposes, and it might be easier just take it as a separate one and present it as this was presented in committee. It was presented in committee. Was it approved?
It was approved unanimously.
Oh, okay.
The
all
amendment,
right.
I'm sorry.
But
Mr. Madison.
But because of the, maybe do it, yeah, I think what Kurt's saying
the
is.
The amendment was approved in committee. You're saying the amendment to this
no,
resolution.
No, it was approved today.
So you need a motion. So
you need a motion to amend. Approve that amendment, this amended item.
I would entertain a
so
motion.
So moved.
To yeah. Amend. The resolution Z19-0003 with the amendment that Mr. Madison has in his hand. Mr. Madison, could you read that amendment?
Yes.
I have a copy of that.
Do you need me to read it again, or can we just state the amendment that I just wrote?
One more time, if you don't mind, so that we can. This is and what are you? Could you explain what you are amending?
Yeah. After I open it back up, I can.
Do you have a copy of that for Madam Clerk?
I do.
It's an email.
The applicant shall record the following restriction to the property deed. The property owner shall provide an engineered evaluation of the flood evaluation resulting from localized flooding and shall adhere to a minimum sill elevation that raises the elevation of any structural openings above the flood elevation as determined by the evaluation at the time of the building permit application. The property owner shall hold harmless Jarvis Township and Madison County government for any flooding issue resulting from building the structure in the proposed location.
Okay, we do have an amendment. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call on amending resolution Z190003.
There we go.
Apologies to the board on the misstep.
The amendment passes. We do have then the resolution amended before the board. Mr. Madison, would you like us to vote on that individually? That's amended, and we'll go on and include the other. Okay, go ahead.
So now we will bring in items G and H. So item one, G1, is again Z19003, which has been just amended. Along with item 019-004, 007, 009, and 0012, along with resolution authorizing the demolition of unsafe buildings and structures, and then item H1, immediate emergency appropriation resolution to amend the fiscal year 19 host fee grants budget to approve a grant to the City of Wood River for a combined sewer overflow project in the amount of $100,000, which will be paid for by the host fee fund and was voted on, I believe, unanimously by the committee.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Ms. Glasper, if you could bring in the items on the Public Safety Committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and fellow board members. First, we would like to submit our monthly license report, and I ask that it be placed on file. Then your Public Safety Committee has a resolution to amend the Madison County Code of Ordinances to provide procedures for electronic reporting of pawnbrokers and secondhand dealers. And along with your Finance and Government Operations Committee, we have a resolution to purchase one new model year 2019 Ford F-150 4x4, 6x6 bed super cab truck for the Madison County Coroner's Office, and I move for their adoption.
Mr. Chairman, if it pleases the board, I'd prefer if item I2 were separated out.
Yes. Okay. Ms. Glasper has submitted the monthly license report. If we are now, if we could consider now the resolution to amend the Madison County Code. So any discussion on that? Any comments?
Yes, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
Mr. Michael.
Thank you. Do you know, Mr. Chairman, were the local, I guess, pawnbrokers or secondhand dealers notified of the potential change in the ordinance?
I did speak to I've been a little bit out of the loop here the last couple of weeks, but I did speak to an association, the Illinois Association of Pawnbrokers, yes.
So my question was, were the local ones notified of the potential change?
I think some were, but maybe some weren't, but some were.
I can comment on that.
Yes, Mr. Parkinson.
I believe Lieutenant Tharp with the Sheriff's Department is going to make sure all the proper notifications are made to make sure that if there are any violations, they are aware of the ordinance before any violations would be cited.
I guess my question is, did they have the opportunity to provide public input since this directly affects them and nobody
else? Yes, they did.
So they were notified of the hearings? But
there was actually one of the pawnbrokers at the meeting, and they had one concern on this particular ordinance, and we adjusted that concern for them, and they were satisfied.
Okay, so they were all notified of the hearing?
There was a public notice of the meeting.
I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that. Mr. Wesley, did you want to speak on this?
Oh, I was going to reiterate what Mr. Parkinson said. There were two pawnbrokers and secondhand dealers that showed up at our public safety meeting. One of them got her question answered prior to the meeting and left. The other one stayed for the meeting, had a concern, and I concur with Mr. Parkinson. In the meeting, we adjusted the resolution to satisfy his concern. It was agreed by Lieutenant Tharp that it probably should be amended, and that's what we voted on as an amended resolution to bring forward.
Yes, back to you, Mr. Michael.
Thanks for answering those questions. I appreciate it. Along with that, then, are there any current pawnbrokers who use leads online?
Yes, there is.
There are. Okay.
Yes.
So the ones that do not, I assume they are reporting via email or fax every evening. Is that probably right?
No, that's not correct. What they're doing is turning in individual. Am I okay to answer?
Yeah, if you know it, I don't care.
I was involved with this bill. That's why.
Ms. Glasper, the chair.
Would you allow Mr. Parkinson to answer?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Currently, what's happening is they're required to report to the sheriff, and it's a paper process, and it's very time consuming, and the amount of time that it costs for the county to process these is very costly and time consuming. What this will do is allow them to go in online. It's no cost to them. They just have to have internet access, and they will enter these themselves. In which any agency throughout the country that's looking for a particular item will be able to discover that stolen item. It's already being used throughout St. Louis. We've been doing it in Granite City. This is nothing new for pawnbrokers. This is just a new tool for law enforcement in this area. We're kind of behind the times on it, and we're getting ourselves in the modern age, and I think this will help thwart crime.
So again, my question, though, was, so for pawnbrokers that don't use it, you're telling me that they come here, they drive here every evening and submit a bunch of papers?
I'm not sure exactly how the county does it, but yes, it's a paper process right now.
But I think what I'm getting at is I'm told that they submit either emails or faxes already.
I guess that could be possible that they fax the receipts or whatever, but either way, they have to be submitted daily, and it's not a computerized thing. This will computerize everything, and it'll make it accessible to all law enforcement agencies that are in the LEADS online program, and is a huge tool for law enforcement.
I understand that. The reason I ask is my only concern is for pawnbrokers who do not use email or LEADS online right now. That means they're going to have to start themselves uploading all these items online, and they're afraid, I think, of potentially now becoming targets for hackers because all their information is going to be online. Not because LEADS online would get hacked, but now if they're happy just submitting it via fax, which is secure, now all their information is going to be stored online on the computer. And I talked to multiple pawnbrokers who don't like that idea. So they're going to have to invest in additional firewalls and safety for their own local pawn shops. And I guess I just
I don't really like that they have to do that, especially since I represent them. But I understand that it does cut down on paperwork for the county.
Any additional discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Chapman, on behalf of the Real Estate Tax Cycle
Committee. We still have to do J, don't we?
I'm sorry. We didn't vote on the truck. I'm sorry.
Yes. Resolution to purchase one new model year, 2019 Ford F-150 4x4, 6x6 bed super cab truck for the Madison County Coroner's Office.
That's a good advertisement. Thank you.
And I move for its adoption.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. Chapman, on behalf of the Real Estate Tax Cycle Committee, if you could please bring in the resolution.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the board, I move the property tax resolution unanimously approved by the Tax Cycle Committee on March 13th be approved by the Madison County Board.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Mr. McCray, on behalf of the Transportation Committee, could you please bring in the item?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and ladies and gentlemen of the board. The Transportation Committee has five items for your consideration tonight. We have an agreement funding resolution for State Street resurfacing with the City of Alton. We have an agreement funding resolution for West Clay Street, Phase 1, with the City of Troy. We have a right-of-way acquisition on Siler Road with Tedrick and Taus. We have an additional right-of-way acquisition for Troy O'Fallon Road, Anderson Real Estate, LLC, and we have a right-of-way acquisition with Wanda Road resurfacing. And I would like to say that I really appreciate the efforts of our county engineer, Mark Gavillo, in securing the right-of-way acquisition on Siler Road. That's been it's been many, many years in the process, and he was very tenacious and I think professional in and we avoided costly litigation in pursuing those. But I would move, these have been unanimously approved by the Transportation Committee, and I would move their adoption.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Motion carries. Before we go to new business, Mr. Wesley, would you, on behalf of the Health Department Committee, please bring in the activities report?
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members, I'd like to bring in the activities report for the Health Department and ask that they be placed on file.
Thank you. Any
Mr.
new
Chairman?
Business? Yes, Mr.
Chairman.
Park.
I'm sorry. I have something also.
Yes, Mr. Holliday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the board, there are two bills that I'm asking each county board member to ask their U.S. congressmen and senators to support. Vaccine Save Lives Resolution. It recognizes the importance of vaccines and immunizations. In the House, it is HRES 179. In the Senate, it's SRES TBD. Also, there needs to be a funding deal to stop the projected $55 billion cut to non-defense discretionary spending to allow for more spending on public health priorities. We need to fully fund the CDC. There is a campaign called 2222 that is to raise CDC's budget by 22% in 2022. CDC plays an important role in the support of local health departments in many ways, including supporting local health departments' ability to detect and respond to infectious disease and outbreaks through national surveillance system alerts, providing logistics, communication, analytics, and other support during an emergency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, back to new business. Mr. Walters?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a special judiciary committee last week, and we asked a lot of really good questions. At this point, I think that we would like to continue moving forward with that, you know, make sure that the people of Madison County know what happened and why is legally, and, you know, just to continue to make sure we don't have a two-tier system for the wealthy versus the poor people of Madison County.
Thank you. Any other new business? Mr. Michael?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Along with that, I do believe, I asked Mr. Von Nida if anybody double-checks any of the clerk's works, and he said no, that on that situation, maybe all of them, I don't know, but on that one, nobody double-checks anything. And he's in now beginning the process of going back to review, he says, 3 months of the summary suspension hearings to ensure that they properly took place. However, I would say, as a former financial auditor, I don't think 3 months is anywhere near enough time to try to determine if any sort of a pattern is developed. So with that being said, I would strongly encourage Mr. Von Nida to expand the scope of his review to go back to at least more like a two-year audit period. At least I actually asked him this in the meeting. I even said perhaps maybe you should go back to the entire 10-year to just double-check everything. And when I said that, he became pretty visibly upset. And he then said that would take 30,000 documents. That was a quote of his, 30,000 documents. Well, I just did the math, and if you're, he says there's 800 DUIs per year, and 16% of those result in having their summary suspension rescinded. If that's the case, that's only a little over 100 DUIs per year. So I would assume that in a period of no longer than just a couple months, either his own team or an independent team could come in and review all the cases in which the DUIs have had their summary suspension rescinded, and we could review those and better understand where the error took place, and then why is there so much of a lack of internal controls? That's what I'm really concerned about, the complete lack of an internal control environment in order to catch those types of errors. And I would actually encourage us to have this discussion potentially at a finance committee meeting if we need to appropriate money to have an independent review to come in to better understand those deficiencies. I'd hope to see that maybe on an agenda, if that's okay with Mr. Moore, in the upcoming Finance Committee meeting.
Yes. I think Mr. Parkinson?
Yeah, I think that mistakes were made in that, and I think there's definitely needs to be some action to make sure it doesn't happen in the future. There's nothing we can change about the past except for fixing it for the future. There are many reasons why they get rescinded, not just from human error, but also from court proceedings or rulings by judges. So it's not as easy as you would think to just define that that magic number. With that said, the reason I tried to speak earlier was I think it's remiss if we don't say that we are very sorry for the loss of your father. You didn't say anything earlier tonight, mainly because you probably just didn't want to bring it up. But I think that as a board, we're very sorry for your loss. I can't imagine losing your father. Mine's still alive, but I do feel your pain in the loss of your father, and I just want to say that.
Thank you. Any other people who would like to speak? I often look to the first row, so I'm going to be, yes, Mr. Tom.
Well, I would concur with Mr. Michael. I think that the odds of this happening, I think at any time you're doing data analysis, you always look for red herrings or outliers. This appears to be an outlier. I hope it is only one time in the 7 years of Mr. Benitez's tenure. But, it does – there should be some additional analysis to confirm that. I think 3 months, because of all the continuances and things like that and in the legal system, it probably isn't enough. And I do think it should be evaluated at least to – Mr. Michael's a CPA, so I trust his opinion of maybe 2 years to make sure that this really hasn't happened before. And because we do want to assure the citizens of Madison County that everybody is on the same level and that they have to have confidence in that. So
thank you. Mr. Chapman.
Yes, in the special judiciary meeting, I did indicate, although that Mr. Von Knight is an elected official and certainly have no control over him, that it would be important to have a corrective plan. He indicated he was working on that, and I will be most interested in seeing that plan. I do believe we have to improve the internal controls because life is actually at risk.
Thank you. Any more additional comments from board members? I think we've said enough, and this issue can go to Mr. Madison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate my colleagues' comments, and unlike them, my concerns are a little more suspicious, I guess I would say. It seems to me that after the special meeting the other night, there were a significant number of coincidences that had to line up for this to fall on this person. It's so coincidental that it just looks very suspicious. That's what concerns me the most, and that's why I would like this, what Mr. Michael has asked for, to be taken care of.
Thank you. Any additional comments from board members? I think we've spoken enough about this, and we can move this to the Finance Committee for additional.
We need to be able to respond to these accusations.
I'm sorry, Ms. Birch, you're not recognized. I think that we've said enough about this. This was new business. If we're going to really discuss this, I think it belongs in the Finance Committee, I think, from what Mr. Michael was suggesting.
Mr. Holliday. At the full board.
Well, if we're discussing this and they're the people who have the knowledge, why not give them the opportunity to speak on their behalf?
This is not the place to have a detailed discussion. Ms. Gorman?
But it was brought up.
I think we should allow them to speak.
It was brought up in public.
I think this is new business. We can take it to the Finance Committee for further and more complete.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask why the Finance Committee? It was brought up in Judiciary. That's where we've already had discussions on this. Why the Finance Committee?
Mr. Michael, go ahead.
You could bring it up in Judiciary too, but I just said if we're going to bring in an outside group to review the documents, you might have to appropriate funding for that. So that's why I said it, Mike. You can do Judiciary too.
I mean, we already have a handle on this. We all have the knowledge of it. We've all been through one meeting already. It doesn't make sense to move it to a different committee.
If we're going to be spending money, it has to go to finance.
Well, it has to be approved. The money would have to be approved by finance, but it can be asked for through the committee that was overseeing
this evening to go into details. I think it should be moved back into the committees, and I would look forward to a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second? In favor? All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor to adjourn?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.